Hi everyone. Welcome, thank you for being with me. I'm going to present our work on constraint modeling with large language models. So I'm Kostis, thank you for being with me. And I'm gonna start directly with an example of what we I will consider as constraint modeling. So something we can all relate to. Let's say you are a famous actor and you have a lot of offers to start in movies, and you want to choose a specific, some specific movie so that you can maximize your income, but there is a constraint. You can only choose one movie per day. So you have a list of candidates and you want to know which ones are the best to choose. And what is the classical way to do that for someone? You can hire an expert, and this expert can formalize this as a constraint programming model. And of course, he has to know the problem domain and the skills to formalize the model. And then they can transpose it to a runnable specification. They can choose whichever they prefer. There are a lot of modeling frameworks and systems that it's easy to transpose to, or maybe easy for the expert. So after this, they can run it and have the final solution. So we solve the problem by modeling it as a constraint programming specification. Of course, now we have the expert, and he is really an expert because constraint programming is powerful, but to do it and to actually model this, we have to have expertise in several areas. First of all, you have to know the problem. We have to know what is what are the stakeholders and what do they want to achieve. Then we have to transpose it into some representation that it can be considered as constraint programming. It can be, it can express declaratively the problem in a way that makes sense for the specific description. And finally, to convert it in some way into some specification that can be run with a state-of-the-art solver or some modeling system. And these three expertise, to have them all three simultaneously, is not something trivial. And for this reason also, it's what we want to do now. We want to make CP more accessible. And you have probably heard about constraint programming being really close to what we consider as the holy grail of programming, where the user states a problem and the machine solves it. So there have been many approaches towards it. First of all, we have a lot of high-level modeling tools that can express the problems in abstract ways, more close to the user, more friendly, with global constraints, with specific methodologies that assist the modeling and the transformation to a solver. We have many recent works on constraint acquisition, where the user gives examples of solutions and no solutions, and the system can infer the constraints based on these examples. And finally, where we will focus now is natural language descriptions. So it would be really ideal if a non-technical user or someone that wants to solve a problem could just specify this problem with English words or with actually any kind of natural language description, and then the system solve it. So focusing on that, I think it's really the time for taking this seriously with large language models. They have taken the world by storm. They are everywhere. We probably use it almost, every week or a month, depending on the use. And yeah, it's also millions of users that use ChatGPT, like an application of a single LLM. So can they do constraint modeling, and can we use them to facilitate doing CP more accessible? And that's a really big question in our work, and we hope to gain some understanding in that. And how we aim to do that is assuming we only have a problem description by the user in some kind of, like in a natural language specification, and the final goal is to get the solution. Now we will attempt to reach the solution through different paths, four different paths. And before going into the details of that, as language models are the core of this whole aim, we will briefly, really briefly introduce some basic concepts. So we don't care about the intrinsics of LLMs. We just see it as black boxes, as it's really common nowadays. We only configure them by the input. So we have to configure the prompt in some way that the response that they will give is something that we wanted to give. And this is something that is possible after GPT-3 came out, and I think most of the 1 billion parameter and more LLMs, like the really large language models, are able to do this kind of task learning. So if you give it a set of examples in the context that specify some kind of task, then the LLM infers what we want it to do, usually, depending on the task, of course, and can give out a probably close to what we want response. And yeah, I use probably because it's still machine learning, and we want just to guide it towards the response that we want. So we will briefly formalize three things that we have to remember. It's the context, which are the examples that we have to use to get the final response. The input query, which, spoilers, it will be a combinatorial problem description in simple natural language. And the final response, that will be the model to run and get the solution. But we will use this approach for all the paths that we have defined, and we will see the details later. Now, there is a basic challenge here, and that's how we will configure the context. What examples we have to put there to get the ideal final response. Of course, the baseline is that we, as humans, we can't just get some very nice sets of examples and say that is the ideal context and it will give me the best response, but this is not a trivial task, and usually, actually, it's not even considered to be effective for every kind of input, because we cannot know what the user wants to ask every time. So in that, there have been many approaches on dynamic selection of the context, and for this, we have to have a pool of possible candidate examples. So from this pool, there are techniques to extract a small number of examples. That's why we do, it's considered as few-shot learning, the in-context learning task. And we can extract these few examples by various techniques. Now, we use three main categories. First of all, we have semantically similarity metrics to configure the context, and that assumes that actually what we have in the query, we want really, really semantically similar examples in the context to get the best possible output. We can introduce some diversity, so don't make them all semantically similar, but add also some like outlier to make them guiding towards more creative outputs. And we also consider a recency effect where we put the most similar example last in the context. Now, we go back to our main methodology, and we will directly start with our baseline. Now, this baseline assumes something that it's not going to work, but it's really important to set it up for our base, and that assumes that large language models can directly solve combinatorial problems, even with some techniques that improve reasoning. So how do we do that? We get the function that we defined earlier. We just want to configure the context in a correct way to get the final solution. And how do we do that? We have a pool of combinatorial problem descriptions and their chain of thought solutions. Now, chain of thought is a reasoning technique that has been introduced in large language models, which guides them to generate reasoning steps before reaching a final solution. So we did that in an attempt to make it reach a solution for given problems and see if this can be done, which cannot, but it's important to include it in this work. So that's also the motivation for going to the second path, and actually the most important of the whole work, which is use large language models as modelers. So based on their expertise on natural language processing and generation, we think that it is a really important tool to do that. And how do we do that? It's really similar to the previous approach, but this time we configure the context in a different way. And how do we do that? Yep, wrong order. So if we configure the context in a different way, we will get the final constraint programming model, which we can use it and solve it by a state-of-the-art solver. And there are many established solvers out there. It just has to be the same framework that the LLM produces the CP model for. And the way to do that is that in our pool now, we don't have chain of thought solutions as the responses, but we have the constrained programming model that can be executed by an interpreter, by a modeling framework, by modeling system, and that it's really open to what we wanted to generate for models. So we can do that, and then the context is configured in this way by selecting a small number of examples from the pool, and we can get our executable constrained programming model that is deterministically solved. We just press a button, model.solve, and that's it. However, going directly from a natural language description to a formal, correct, runnable constrained programming model is not a trivial task. It includes two different subtasks, I would say. First of all, we have to identify the elements, like what are the constraints of the problems of the problem, what is the objective of the problem, what are the decision variables, how to formalize them into some math specification. And after we do that, which we would call the blueprint model, then we had to transform it into a runnable solver specification, into some kind of code or model that could be run. And that also requires expertise in semantically and syntactically following the formalisms of the system. So for the first subtask, to extract the element, the constrained programming elements of the given problem description, we, following again the same recipe, we just change the pool for changing the output of the LLMs. We set the pool as follows. The response to each problem description is a larger blueprint model. We call it blueprint model because it designs the constrained programming formal, semi-formal specification for the given description. And in this way, we are aiming to provide more information to the context for the final runnable model specification. Now, in this way, we get the blueprint model for the given query, and we add it in the context after the query to generate the final constrained programming model. And again, following the same recipe, we introduce this time the blueprint model to the inputs of the pool, and we pair it with the final CP model that we can run and get the solution exactly as before. Nothing changes in the last part. We just run the generated model. The final path now is motivated by the fact that even to extract the constraints from the problem description directly could be considered non-trivial itself as well. And for that reason, we have used techniques that have been used in various works over the recent years for entity recognition. And I will not go into all the steps of this, as they are pretty similar to the previous paths. But mostly, we want, in the yellow box, we want to identify the specific constraint elements in the problem description that are paired to their tags. So we want to find what are phrases that refer to a constraint, what are phrases that refer to an objective direction. And by doing that, again, we aim to append more information so that the final, that the generated models are more accurate. Now, all this methodology is nice on paper, but we have to evaluate it. And this was harder than expected, in my opinion, because to evaluate a generated model against a ground truth model sounds easier to me in my ears, but it's actually much more difficult, especially for more complex problems, as how do we know that this generated problem is correct? There are various approaches to that. So first of all, we considered an established metric from, again, recent works, which takes all the constraints and the objective of the generated model and pairs them one by one with the ones of the ground truth model. Now with this, we want to see, even if we don't generate constraint models correctly entirely, we want to see if at least we are close to this, if we are close to almost correct specification. Then we go to the stricter metric, which is, I don't care if 9 out of 10 constraints are correct. I want all 10 out of 10 constraints and objective to be exactly as a ground truth model. And this is the strictest metric of all, but it's important to exist for this to be a more homogeneous approach. Finally, the most user-centric, or let's say end-to-end metric, and practical metric also, is the final solution. Because at the end of the day, we give a problem and we just want the solution. We don't care about how do we reach the solution. So it's really important to evaluate also this part, and we evaluate it by injecting this solution as a constraint to the ground truth model. If the ground truth model is not satisfied, then this solution is not correct and we consider it wrong. And yeah, notably, we also have to mark the number of errors, which is how many models were generated in some kind of a runtime error or a syntax error with them. So it's important to know that as well. Another hard part that we had was to find datasets. There are no datasets from natural language to constrained programming models. Absolutely nothing. There are close to that, there are linear optimization datasets, such as NL4Opt. It was also a competition some years ago to formulate from natural language description formal mathematical models. There are logic grid puzzle datasets, which are clues and entities of puzzles to their solutions. But these are homogeneous datasets. These are datasets that contain the same class of problems. We have linear problems, we have puzzles, and this is something that we wanted to address, and for that we added a qualitative test by creating a new mixed diverse dataset from our modeling, from a modeling course from our university. And indeed, this is a really small dataset. It's not intended to quantitatively control the tests of our approach, but it's really important to have also another more diverse aspect of this method. So, going to the results, can we use language models as CP solvers? Yeah, as already mentioned, it's not applicable, and it makes sense. Like it has been recognized that the language models cannot be used for mathematical optimization and reasoning steps that include that. Of course, language models evolve every day, so these are, I have to emphasize that these are experiments done with GPT 3.5 and other LLMs for this specific kind of datasets. So, chain of thought solving, we don't do it, but CP modeling seems to be a really nice approach to solve combinatorial problems, and we can see more than 50% in the two datasets, more than 50% increase. And then we have to evaluate the intermediate representations, like does a blueprint model help? Do we want entity tagging in the context of the LLM to improve the models? And we have some mixed results here. The good option is to pick them and choose them into formulating simple linear programming problems. In this, indeed, we can see some increase in using the blueprint and the entity tags. But even for logic grid puzzles, we can see that they introduce errors. And we identified that mostly blueprint models make the context larger, which means it's also more easy to produce erroneous blueprint models as the LLM continues. So we then have also more noise in the context and more wrong final models. We also identified that entity tagging sometimes misclassifies some variables as values, and it also introduces noise and final wrong models. So, to sum up the whole pipeline, we would not consider this path. We would not want LLMs to be used as optimization solvers. I think we could really step on this path and see how far we can go in this approach by using LLMs as CP modelers. And intermediate representations could help, but depending on the data set, depending on the task that we want to achieve and how we want to approach it. Now, going to the LLM kind of experimentation, we also have some experimental results there. And the first and important is that we want to dynamically select the context. It's important to include relevance, some diversity, or some recency effect in the context, as this guides the retrieval mechanism to configure a more representative context for the language model. Then, how many examples should we use in the context? It's a really important question and a dimension that we experimented with. We found a really nice pattern where there was always the same number of tokens reached, after which we didn't have an increase. So you can see that for the blueprint models, the threshold is much lower than the non-blueprint model included ones. And that includes some kind of saturation in the context, some kind of the LLM saying, don't give me too many examples, I cannot handle them all, just give me some, a few qualitative ones. And finally, with experiments, we want to have some more qualitative results on the mixed data set, on the diverse data set. So yes, it's all good. We can use this approach to solve simple linear problems and maybe homogeneous puzzles. But what about more complex problems? And what we did for that, we gathered exercises from a CP modeling course. We arranged them in increasing difficulty based on the exercise number session. And we saw a nice, quote, nice pattern that as the difficulty increases, also the LLMs find it harder to model more correctly. And yeah, this indicates that we have to try more. So also to mention some small evaluation, not small, some evaluation challenge that we had there, it was that we couldn't use model accuracy and declaration accuracy because the choice of decision variable is free. That means that we can model a problem, a complex problem, in many ways, in many different decision variables we could try to model it, and they could all maybe go to the same solution. So for this, we only considered solution metric, which we did it by prompting LLMs to generate code that prints the output in a structured way so that we could then put it to the ground truth model. So to sum up, what are our contributions? First of all, the main one is that we introduced a large language model-based framework to transform natural language descriptions to formal executable constraint programming models, and that's to facilitate the accessibility of constraint programming to more users. We did that, and we also introduced some intermediate representations to disambiguate difficulties on translating directly from natural language to the final constraint programming model. We evaluated many dynamic strategies to configure the context of the large language models to configure more correct runnable CP models. And we evaluated all these with three established metrics that aim to have a more holistic approach into how well this method is. Finally, we augmented the existing data sets with CP models that can be used also by the community to experiment more with similar approaches. And we also created the small data set as a trigger for bigger ones. So what are the key conclusions that I would like you to keep from this presentation is that, first of all, it's promising to use such powerful tools as an approach to model formal CP specifications, and that's something that I really see to extend it. So how do we do that? We saw that using dynamic context in the LLMs is really, really useful for improving performance, but we also have two really important limitations or for future work, let's say, that first of all, we didn't see LLMs perfect at modeling more challenging problems. And the most important, in my opinion, is that we miss natural language to constrain programming problems datasets. So this is something that I think would be a baseline for evaluating more approach on that. And this is the first and most important future work that I see us. We could also integrate coding debugging techniques or multiple sampling techniques to alleviate the errors that we have and to also trigger the LLM to identify maybe some potential errors before getting the solution. And we also could use such approaches to design some kind of interactive system where the user and the machine talk to each other and conclude at a nice runnable constraint programming model. Of course, there are other future works that we could use, such as fine-tuning or parameterized problems such as big VAC routing problems with large data that we would like to have some method to tackle them. Now, we have also a small demo. I will go really quick. I know the time is a bit late, I think. So really many thanks to Thomas. He did an amazing work with this demonstration, with this website that have designed. Oh, sorry. So let me find it real quick. So this is our viewpoint of a chat interface for a CP modeling system. So let's say that I have this combinatorial problem that I want to model real quick. I don't want to find the equations for that or decision variables, and I want to say, let's say that we want to solve a packing rectangles problem. So we write here the rectangular packing problem is a problem that we have to arrange some rectangles in a smallest area as possible. And I also give it some kind of data. So I don't know if you can see it. I will zoom in a bit. So if I run this, we can expect that we hope, actually, because it's still an LLM, we hope that it will be, we will generate a correct CP model. And yeah, Thomas has done an amazing work on the integration of all these tools. And we can see that it designed a model, which we don't know if it's correct, of course. And this is, for now, our job to validate it, let's say, in some way. But it's really nice that we already have some initial model to work with. And we execute the code, you can see it here, and get some a solution. Now, of course, there is still some work in progress, and this is kind of a beta version, but we can also visualize it, and I will complete it here. This is work in progress, of course, and we are happy to continue working on this if there is a... Yeah, we're seeing live. Yeah, if it doesn't work, it's over, but... Let's see the solution. Yeah, for now, this uses GPT-40 Mini and as a backend LLM. Not of course. Yeah, it doesn't work still. It's work in progress. But thank you for addressing the demo. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Questions? We start here at the front.
Thank you for this nice presentation. My question is, in the case that it doesn't work, that the model that you generate is erroneous, you cannot use it.
Zero shot.
Is false, is not correct.
To use without examples, you mean?
No. In your technique, if the LLM has generated a model, but the model is not the correct one, is it possible to use constraint acquisition techniques to refine, to try to debug the model, or you could have bugs that are completely outside of this?
Yeah, this is a really nice viewpoint, because we didn't include this in this work as it focused on the initialization of the model, but it's actually a future step that it could be integrated to fix the model, let's say, or to understand why the model is not correct by the user. And it's part, I think, of the multi-part interactive system that is part of the future work. But yeah, this is a really to the point observation. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. In your evaluation, it's kind of odd, I find, that you have a ground truth to compare with in your examples. So you specify the accuracy and so on. In reality, you don't have a ground truth because the user gives a problem and you don't know, the user doesn't have a solution. Otherwise, he wouldn't ask the question. So how do you convince the user that what you're doing is actually the right thing? Just showing him the final model is not enough because the user may not understand that model. And showing the solution is not enough because the user will ask, well, why is that the solution? So you were dismissing the entity extraction, I think, a little bit too easily, and your blueprint model, because that seemed to be something that you can actually show to a human and say, is that your problem? And so I think that is quite an important thing when you try to evaluate this. In the end, you have to convince a human that this is a solution.
Yeah. So, yeah, a more interactive approach is indeed something that could alleviate this. And the user could see that maybe that's not my model. And we didn't include any kind of interaction in this world, but I think that it's where this field could go, so that the user could see, yeah, that's a wrong model, I don't want it. Why? Because constraint acquisition techniques or some other interaction with the user. And yeah, indeed, we didn't, the system cannot say to the user, I gave you this model and this is correct, but we can integrate techniques that make it evaluating it. So the system could check again and say, maybe that's not correct. Is it correct? But yeah, I agree with the viewpoint that the user should be in this interaction for the best way possible.
Yeah.
Hello. I was wondering, how can you be sure that the model you generated were not already in the training data, since you're using an out-of-the-box language model without any public, for which the training data is not public?
So it's like, how do we know that the LLM just didn't copy from their internal presentation? We don't know this, of course. And this is what we try to cover with a qualitative dataset that are more, let's cautiously curated problems that it's really, really, we don't know, of course, but it's possible that the LLM has not seen them yet. And we also have different data representations so that it's as new as a problem as possible. But it's always this problem that there are so many data out there, which is really possible that all of them, the LLM has already seen it. But yeah, we cannot know it for sure, of course.
Yeah, the very back.
Hi. When your output of the LLM is not syntactically correct, do you have a way, or are you thinking about a way to give this as a feedback to the LLM and adjust the weight in some way?
So to validate the final model, is it what you mean?
So I guess the output of LLM get passed to the solver,
yes.
And if it is syntactically incorrect, mm-hmm. It will give you some error.
Yes.
Have you thought about a way to use this error to update the weights of the LLM
So
possibly it will decrease the frequencies of these syntactic errors?
So yeah, we haven't thought about that as it, I see it falling under the fine-tuning technique, where in this approach we don't play with the parameters of the model. We just get it as a black box without changing the internal representation. But I think this is a part of the fine-tuning future work that could be investigated in more detail, and yeah, I'm quite happy to talk about it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm wondering, have you considered the problems listed on CSPlib? I think there are hundreds of natural language problems.
Exactly. We have some work in progress where we're trying to extend this data set that we created by CSPlib problems, by other problems of the constraint programming community, and we aim to increase this qualitative data set. Yes. Thanks. Thank you.